Hi, I'm Jeremy Kirk with Intel 471, and this is Studio 471, our regular video podcast on cyber threat intelligence and cybersecurity. Structuring a cyber threat intelligence program differs for every organization. It depends on size, the assets you're going to protect, and also the particular threat landscape that affects that industry. Kobe Schwartz is the cyber threat intelligence is the head of cyber threat intelligence and analysis at Signify, and he's also the founder of Underdark.ai. We're going to have a discussion about how he structured his cyber threat intelligence program and how to get the most value out of it. Thanks for coming along, Kobe.
Hi, nice to be here, Jeremy.
So we're going to have a really practitioner-focused conversation, but before that, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do now and what you've done in the past?
Of course. So I'll start. My background basically 2008, 2009. I was working as Russian cybercrime and Russian anti-espionage analyst. That's a governmental job that eventually brought me to the world of private sector, where I've worked for companies that were basically of the same style as PayPal, e-commerce and transactions and everything that has to do with fraud. And starting over there from a governmental job, going to something that was basically monitoring cybercrime, I moved on with my career, basically dealing with the darknet, dark web, monitoring the fraud that is happening there, and eventually, finishing and working with Signify, a company that I'm with since 2016, almost in a couple of months, almost 10 years. And I've been running the CTI function for a couple of years, and monitoring the dark web, that's my passion.
Interesting. We're going to talk about a little bit of that later. Let's talk about how you structured. Like CTI is still a relatively newish, field. Like within the last 10 to 15 years, how have you structured the CTI team at Signify? And did it have a team before? And what did you start with? And where did you go?
So, super good question. When I joined Signify, there was no, I mean, there was a CTI analyst in the SOC. I was brought up to a different department, which was called, still called, corporate security. The SOC, usually, historically speaking, is in IT. And basically, there were two analysts that were doing CTI, but the guy in the SOC was mainly doing some technical and IOCs. Intelligence, and I was brought in basically for fraud inspection and investigations and darknet monitoring. And when I joined the team of corporate security, I was the only one. There was no team, and I had to basically build all the procedures and all the work structures and everything that that I'm doing right now from scratch, without any help. After a year, there was an intern that joined me. After a couple of years, there was more analysts joining me, but the beginning was rough. I had to basically jump into the water, start swimming by myself, and learning how to swim. So that was not easy back in 2016.
Yeah, and then did you how did you know you said you kind of started in fraud. How did you then figure out like I guess the set of intelligence requirements that were most pertinent then to Signify?
So at the beginning, I didn't. What I tried to do is basically reaching out to various stakeholders and asking them what do they need. And one of the reasons is because I knew that I know some things and I can investigate and research by myself in order to find some of the threats that might be relevant to the company. But eventually, I'm a people's person. I like to talk. I reached out to various functions within the company in order to understand what kind of threats are interesting to them for me to monitor, because I knew that I couldn't do it by myself. It was not structured. It's not something that that Intel 471, for example, is providing now, the gears, right? We didn't have that back in the day. It was not as matured, it was not as nice, but it was the beginning. And I had like five or six, seven stakeholders that I would chat on a monthly basis, and they will give me some information that they needed me to monitor, and this is how it started.
Interesting. And so your team today still is pretty small. Like, how do you have it, structured, and what are their responsibilities?
So you're correct. I have working alongside me two analysts that are full-time employees. Usually we have one or two interns. Today we have only one intern. And the structure is usually that I really like one person that is very dedicated to the technical aspect of CTI, somebody else who's more on the open source investigations, maybe a bit of humans. For example, one of my colleagues, she's a Chinese national. living in the Netherlands. And so she's very, you know, she's fluent. She was born in China. She's fluent in Mandarin, and she's responsible for that geopolitical, I call it geopolitical, but geographical location, because
Sure,
there's
yep.
a lot of crime, a lot of fraud coming from there. And this is how I like to do it. Basically, like, it's like an intelligence desk. We have one analyst doing the technical intelligence, another one is on the Chinese specter or geolocation, and myself more on the Russian crime, cybercrime, and all the rest, and more strategical ones. So this is how I like to work, basically giving some responsibilities that, you know, you don't do everything. It's not possible at the day of the, you know, at the time of data, where there's so many data, so much information. So we split the responsibilities, and, you know, we meet once a week in order to discuss what was done, and, you know, what's happening in the world of crime.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, how does that team interface then with like security operations and IT operations?
Super good question, because, you know, obviously it's a different kind of department that is more looking on, as you said, on IT, on how the everything is flowing and how everything is working. They don't really look at crime and threats and alerts, right? So it's a stakeholder. It's a very important stakeholder. We try to be in contact and communication with them, you know, almost on a daily basis, basically explaining and trying to understand what are their pain points and how we can help. Because eventually, you know, a cyber attack on the company, it matters not only to us but also to them. But sometimes it's a bit hard, because, you know, IT, usually all they care about that everything is working smoothly. They don't care about EDRs, and, you know, some sensors, and those CTI weird analysts coming to them and asking the questions, hey, what's happening there, and why is it like that? So it's like having you know, your wife's mother, and you have to be in good communication with her, metaphorically speaking, of course, in order for everything to go smoothly. And IT is a very important stakeholder for the CTI team and for corporate security.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned that your team gets an overwhelming amount of alerts. I mean, this is a very common complaint in you know, CTI. How do you go about managing then those priorities of like what ones do you pick up and how do you sort them out? And then how do you go about like, you know, assigning them and workflow and I guess closing those concerns?
If I'll have an answer for that, it will be a lie, because this is the, I think, the major pain point for me since 2016, where we started basically buying vendors, and you know, getting feeds and alerts, and it started with, you know, one or two alerts a day, then 50, then 60, then 100, then hundreds. And I was overwhelmed, definitely when I was out by myself. This is when I said, you know, to management that I need help, and I recruited some analysts to help me with, you know, going through the alerts. But up until today, we're in the age of you know, AI and data refinement, it's still hard. We don't get thousands of alerts a day. We get less, because you can create rules. You can run an AI agent on top of the alerts, and you can basically tell him, hey, ignore this and that kind of alert. Please send it to me. But still, we are tremendously overwhelmed with big amount of alerts. One is because there's a lot of things that are happening, right? A lot of crime. That are actually true positives, not necessarily false positives. But alongside that, you get a lot of false positives as well, and that's an issue. That's an issue. I don't want to tell you that we need more people, because it's always the easiest solution. Hey, hire 100 analysts and let's do it. What we're trying to do is a lot of automatization, a lot of rules, and do it a little bit smarter. So the low severity alerts will go automatically, you know, through the flow to the security tools that we have. And the high severity ones will go for the human touch, for the analyst to review. But sometimes we do miss important alerts, because the process is not perfect.
And you know, you talked a little bit about dark web and you know, your background is investigating, you know, Russian, you know, Eastern European oriented cybercrime. How much of a, I guess, play does that have into your defense, you know, looking at forums and marketplaces and, you know, Telegram chatter? How much does that contribute to your, I guess, you know, sort of headspace then, as far as, you know, who may be potentially interested in doing something harmful to your organization?
So in the beginning, it was a niche. It was something that I would do on the side, and it was nice to remind about it that it exists to management or people within the company or the stakeholders. But I think in 2025, going to 26, that became not only a niche; it became something that is I wouldn't say the bulk of the work. Of course, it's not. But it's definitely something that creates a lot of buzz because it's important. Not only because it's all over the news, not only because it's an important topic, because at least in my eyes, there is cybercrime everywhere. You can't ignore, geopolitics or countries, it's everywhere. But with that said, the most sophisticated and, the most, I would say, notorious ones are coming from East Europe and specifically Russia. Definitely targeting Western companies like ours. So that kind of information, that kind of monitoring is definitely important. It's definitely something that we put a lot of effort in monitoring and providing alerts from. And I have to admit, one of the best alerts I had in my entire career, right, in Signify and before. It came through an alert that came, well, actually from you guys. It's not something that I tend to reveal, but I'll do it right now. It was a long time ago, 2018, and it was caught in a very notorious Russian forum called Exploit.IN by a gentleman that works for you guys, still there. I'm not gonna reveal his name, but he's a good guy. Starts with a J. That was an alert that basically brought a lot of attention internally because it was a good catch. It came from a Russian-speaking threat actor. It was a very severe incident. And to your question, it's definitely something that we're putting an effort on. To tell you the truth, it's not that every day we're catching bad guys doing something bad to the company, but once in a while, something big pops up, and it's usually from those corners of the internet. The Russian threat actors doing something very meaningful and very big.
We should disclose that Kobe is a customer of Intel 471. We're not the only defense tool that he uses or CTI tool he uses.
True.
But as far as the flow now of what we're seeing, it's access, right? You've got access brokering. It's just an entire huge market. And so when we see threat actors all the time say, I have access to kind of vaguely describing the organization because obviously they know there's a lot of monitoring of the forums. And then trying to figure out, oh, is that us, right? Because we do see somewhat of a circumstantial correlation between access brokering and then down the line ransomware. Now it's all not always possible to go, okay, it was this specific access sale that led to this group attacking this organization, but we do see when we're able to identify the organization whose access is being sold, and then we see 3 months down the line that they're a victim of a ransomware attack. There's a very strong, now that's not to say that somebody else didn't discover the access, right, and that it wasn't that particular sale that led to that particular breach, because threat actors are also stumbling over each other in their scans and finding ransomware gangs putting other ransomware on organizations that have already been infected, kind of just ridiculous kind of stuff. But there's a strong flow too, and that and those tips do come from the so-called dark web, don't they?
Of course, and something that I have to add to what you just mentioned is that it's not enough to just monitor and take screenshots, right, from the forums. And what I like about you guys and other vendors in the field that are, monitoring the dark web is the capability of Humint, right? It's something that I think it's not in many organizations it's not mature enough. That knowledge and that understanding that you need to do it sometimes by yourself, but mostly through vendors, because they have the expertise, they have the human power, they have the analysts. And as you mentioned, okay, you see somebody selling an access, you don't know if it's to you because most of the threat actors won't reveal it due to hundreds of reasons, right? Because they know that they're being monitored, they don't want to be caught by the police, and so on and so on. You need that specific expertise in reaching out to them to know how to manipulate them, get the samples, or get even the final word. What's the target, who's the victim, who's being targeted, and his access to his network is being sold. And then you need those professionals, be it in your team internally, like we try to do in Signify, or to have it with a vendor that you're trusting and you know that they're professional, they have those people that are ex FBI, NSA, GCHQ, whatever, and they've been doing that forever, and they it's bread and butter, they know how to do it. And why I'm mentioning that, because One of the biggest attacks that can happen to your organization, somebody sells access because he obtained it through info stealer or any other way, and then your organization is being hit 3 months after by ransomware, as you mentioned, and you want to prevent that. You want to do the prevention, right? The predictive measures. And one of the ways to do it is to do human. That's how I see it. Something else to add, Jeremy, that I have to say is that in when I mean, you know, to, I'm talking to people in conferences and I'm discussing humans, or I'm presenting. A lot of people that I meet always say, "Ah, you just talk to people online, right?" Usually, it comes from CISOs that are a bit older, that they don't value the human intelligence the way I do, and it a bit hurts, right? That you know that people don't understand. It's not just talking. We're not talking to people just to have fun and you know waste some hours because I'm bored. I think that the most crucial intelligence will come from that corner of cybersecurity, which is human and threat intel.
Yeah, it's just the bedrock of everything too, because I mean, I was going to ask you about, does automated collection solely satisfy intelligence needs? But, unless reputations of threat actors, and if you can go, oh, okay, well, you know what? Actually, 9 times out of 10, when this threat actor makes a claim, it's actually true, right? And we know this because we've followed this person for years and years and years. And unless you have that context too, because if obviously if you're busy a busy CTI analyst, you may not be keeping up with the cybercrime soap opera that happens on the forums either, and you may not go, okay, oh, this actor X, actually this one's pretty dangerous. Now this one actually lies 80% of the time, right? So that's something that to take with like a grain of salt. But did, yeah, just to ask you about automated collection, I mean, how do you find that versus human augments that, doesn't it?
So it's definitely a must. Automatization makes my teams and my life easier, but it's a different aspect of threat intel. You can't have just automated collection. I don't want to give percentage. I wouldn't say 50-50, but it's definitely something that you need to have in your operation of CTI. We do have it as well, where we have vendors that are basically automatically sending feeds and sending IOCs and data directly to our security measures within the company. But that's, in my eyes, just covers just 20 or 30% of the threat landscape. And it's definitely must have, but it's you can't build around it and say, okay, we have automatization, everything is fine, everything is protected. No. It's like basically, a police unit or a police force or even a military. When you need to have the Air Force, you need to have the Navy. So automatization in a cybersecurity or corporate security function is definitely one part of it. You need to have others in order to support the operation, in order to support the the countermeasures and the security. And in my eyes, alongside the human and the monitor of the dark web, which is also important, but you can't have just that. You need to have, in addition, automatization, collection of IOCs, strategical intelligence, technical, and so on and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, has your team dipped into threat hunting at all at this point?
I wish. So we started looking into it. It's definitely something that I've recognized a couple of years ago that we need to have. We had somebody that had been doing that, alongside his other tasks, but we don't have a a dedicated person to that. It's something that is definitely on the roadmap. It's definitely that we will add because the way I see it, you have CTI. And it, with all the functions, the human, the automatization, the strategical, whatever, and you need to have a threat hunter, right? Because without the threat hunter, it feels to me that we are not blind. We do see the threats, and then we want to go back and look internally, and we can't. It's not enough to have SOC analysts that can do some kind of threat hunting in a way, but you need to have somebody dedicated, a professional, right? I won't hire a cook to build my house, right? So that's the way I see it. That's the way I see it. You need to have somebody that knows the craft, he knows what he does, he knows to ask the right question based on the intel that we provide. And it's definitely a must. On the roadmap, we'll definitely have somebody, doing that in the near future.
And I mean, if you had resources to scale your team, and this is a very binary question, so don't feel the need to answer in a binary way, but how would you do that? Either, more humans or more products or a mix of both, or how would you do it?
I would say a mix of both. There's definitely, the way I see it after being almost 10 years in the company is that we have some, we're neglecting some corners of CTI. One of them, I would say, it's APTs. But again, if you bring up something automated and you have another tool, but you have only three or four analysts, Well, some people will say you have more than we do. The way I see it, you know, four and five, it's not enough. You need to have more. But it's always to have an additional set of eyes, additional set of of hands, somebody that can look into the data and operate the platform and give the human touch. So to your question, definitely another additional person that can look, for example, at APT threats. It's something that unlike cybercrime, it won't happen. The threats won't happen to you on a daily basis. But those threats are pretty severe and pretty big,
Yes.
and you do definitely need to robust your capabilities with a tool, and definitely a person that knows what he does, knows what to ask. And I'll connect it to the threat hunting, maybe even a threat hunter that hunts for the IUCs that the threat intel platform provides internally.
Yes. And when you talk to executives or even people, in IT, how do you quantify the ROI on the investment in, a CTI team?
I'll have to admit I'm counting on people who are smarter than me. I've asked a bunch of times two of my vendors. I would not tell you which ones, but it's not Intel for someone to provide me with an ROI report, because I'm not, I would say, not professional enough to well, not professional enough is not a good word, but maybe I'm not smart enough to create something that can look at all the various customers and then calculate the potential attack that might happen. And I got a really good reporting on that based on various reports, be it from the FBI that calculated how much a breach cost an organization or a ransomware attack. And then if you prevented that attack, how much money could you save? So we created a bunch of those reports alongside our vendors with the help of those vendors. And the ROI reports were pretty good, meaning that you can literally see how much money you saved from preventing a ransomware attack or a breach or a leak, because the data is out there. When you have really good organization, be there law enforcement agencies like the FBI that I really like to look upon as definitely in the cyber world, in the cyber threat intelligence world, as somebody that they know what they're talking about, and they're the corner of truth or the beacon of truth out there, right? I know you guys also like that sentence. We want to be your beacon of truth, and it's something that you need to look at organizations that have been doing that, that threat hunting, the cybercrime fighting, and they have the information that they can build a really good report upon. And this is what I ask my vendors: look upon those sources of truth, build something for me, and I'll use it internally to prove the ROI why we're using those vendors, you guys. And I think it's easy.
Yeah, great. And when you, I guess, talk to executives in your organization that are not involved in security, what kind of language do you use, I guess, when telling them again to communicate the return on investment in tools and people?
I think that you need to simplify everything in a way that a lot of the threat intel stuff that we do are easy for us to understand, but to people who are not in the field, they need to I have to speak to them not in a technical way. It's always easy to discuss the the buzz events, I call them, right? A big attack by the Russian APT. Russian government attacks Ukraine, the electrical company or something like that, and then try to basically explain how it affects us or might happen to us because there's similarities. So talking, about points that are relevant to, for discussions that are day-to-day discussions that are in the news, and try to bring them to the reality of our company that, that something that happens on a bigger scale between, conflicts between countries might affect us as well. And this is why we need the tools that we need. So I think that this is the way it is for me to try to simplify things and talk in a way that is interesting to the executive because he can align himself and connect to day-to-day events, right? If I'm going to talk about IOCs or TTPs, nobody's going to listen to me. If I'm going to talk about threat actors, nobody's going to listen to me. They don't know, they don't care.
Yeah.
But if you talk about something big that is the there's passion about it for their countrymen or to them, and it's interesting to them to know about, they will listen to you.
Great. Kobe Schwartz, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jeremy.